express the entire gamut of Indian culture in one word, that word would be self-restraint. If you are to express the ways and means of ensuring peace of humanity, that word is self-restraint. When you have uttered this word, you have said everything which is going to pave the way to health and wealth and welfare of all people, both here and hereafter. That is the way to what are known as Abhyudaya and Nishreyasa. Prosperity in this world and blessedness in the other world. It does not mean that you have to suffer in this world necessarily for the sake of blessedness in the other world. The other world and this world are not two opposing camps. They are like the soul and the body of a person. The other world that you think of, the heaven or the realm of higher attainment, may be compared to the soul of a person and the life that we live in this physical world is the body of the soul. If body and soul are not enemies, they are complementary facets of a single approach to life integral, then life here and hereafter are not two different things. There are people who reject this world for the sake of the future world. The world is binding. It is Maya, it is an illusion, it is a bondage. The earlier you are rid of it, the better for you, for the sake of the salvation of the soul. This is like saying, the earlier you are rid of this body, the better it is for your soul. You know very well how wrong is this approach. You cannot get rid of the body, because it is a condition that is necessary for the fulfillment of a purpose for which it is manufactured by the soul itself. The body has not been thrust on you by somebody from outside. It is a house built by the soul itself for a specific purpose. Until the purpose is fulfilled for which it is built, it cannot be thrown away. The world is related to the higher realms of being in a similar manner. The manifested and unmanifested are not two opposing camps. They are two facets of one wholesome reality. Neither can you reject the world for the sake of God, nor can you reject God for the sake of the world. Neither of these approaches are permissible. Materialists reject God and cling to the world. Ascetics reject the world and cling to God. Neither of them is seeing things in a wholesome manner. I gave you the example. You cling to the soul and throw away the body, or cling to the body and throw away the soul, how would you succeed? And what would be the catastrophic conclusion of this kind of unwise attempt on your part? This is one phase of what I am going to tell you today. The other phase is a continuation of what I told you yesterday, the role of self-restraint or self-control in the life of people. Is self-control meant only for spiritual aspirants and it is not a concern of those who cannot be regarded as spiritual aspirants? Actually, you cannot distinguish between spiritual aspirants and non-spiritual aspirants. Just as you can't cut the life of a person into soul somewhere and body elsewhere, God somewhere, world another place, like that you cannot divide life into spiritual and unspiritual. These are very important things to be known by any earnest seeker of truth. Truth is not in an otherworldly God. It is also not in a world minus God. They are not two things. The idea of duality, the idea of the distinction that is usually drawn between the visible and the invisible, is to be taken care of properly. Life is an integral whole. It is a completeness in itself. And therefore, you cannot reject anything as unnecessary. A thing looks unnecessary because it has already served its purpose. If you have eaten a beautiful meal up to your nose, you may not like to eat a second time in a few minutes afterwards. The very thing that sustained you and was enchanting you, over which you were in a rapture of the delicious meal, becomes redundant because it has served its purpose. A thing which has not served its purpose cannot be abandoned. It is up to you to realize if everything in the world has served its purpose and you have no connection with it. Everything is related to you, but relatively, tentatively, for a particular purpose and for a particular period of time. There is no compartmentalization of life into sections or classifications of purpose. Life is a growth in a holistic manner from the lower completion to the higher completion. Life is not a movement horizontal, it is a vertical ascent. The verticality of the ascent consists in the wholeness that constitutes a particular level of your life. Whatever be the status that you occupy in life, you are a whole person. A poor man is as whole in his personality as a rich man. The wholeness of the rich person is not capable of distinction from the wholeness of a poor person. Poverty and wealth are accretions that have grown on the personality, which by itself can stand on its own legs. There is a growth in a holistic manner in everything, from the seed up to the banyan tree, from the little babe up to the genius. There is no separate section wise interpretation possible between a baby that a genius was and the genius that he is now. A great scientific genius who is mature in his mind now was a little baby once upon a time. But he has not jumped from the baby condition to the genius condition. He has holistically outgrown the lower category of wholeness and entered into a larger maturity of wholeness. The relationship between body and soul also is one of integration. If the body ever totally different from the soul, you could have kept the body somewhere in a cupboard and soul could be somewhere else. They not only work together, but they work as a unified purpose. The force that is behind the operation of the body is the soul. And the mechanism that is used by this force inside is the body. Now, as we have observed earlier, our essential nature is consciousness, and it is not locked up inside the body, but it is also everywhere. Infinitude is the nature of this consciousness, which means to say, outside consciousness nothing can be. If there is something outside consciousness, as I pointed out to you earlier, there would be nobody to know that there is nothing outside consciousness. Consciousness is being, being is consciousness. Satta eva bodho, bodha eva cha satta. Existence is consciousness, consciousness is existence. Existence also cannot be divided into parts. You exist, I exist, a mountain exists, sun exists, moon exists, river exists, an ant exists, elephant exists. So existence is a common denomination, a foundational reality of everything. Therefore, existence cannot be partitioned section-wise. Therefore, indivisibility is the nature of existence. And indivisibility also is the nature of consciousness. Inasmuch as there cannot be two indivisibilities or two infinities, existence becomes consciousness. Consciousness becomes existence. Everything is being consciousness. Satchidananda. If this is the case, what is the role of the sense organs in the life of a person? As I mentioned to you yesterday briefly, the senses contradict the wholeness of the spirit. They create a segmentation between the perceiving consciousness and the perceived object, so called. There is a violation of your conclusion that being consciousness is indivisible. If you are going to stick to this conclusion, being consciousness is all inclusive and it is all in all, then the sense organs have no role to play. They cannot act or operate at all. The eyes cannot see anything because there is nothing for them to see. If you believe that the eyes are seeing something outside, that outsideness violates the indivisibility of existence. It violates the nature of pure consciousness. It violates the nature of ultimate reality. So all sense perception is a violation of the nature of ultimate reality. If that is so, all our life, which is sense-ridden, conditioned by perception through the sense organs, is not compatible with the nature of reality. The humdrum life that we are passing through in this world of dissection, division, partiality, good and bad, right and wrong, and all that, does not seem to be in harmony with the conclusion that reality is indivisible. The sense organs rebel against the conclusion that existence is indivisible. The sense organs are the opposite party, contrary to the ultimate truth that existence is pure consciousness. In the biblical parlance, you might have heard the story that someone called Lucifer rebelled against God. He asserted his independence. And the reaction from God was a catastrophic rejection of the self-affirmation of Lucifer and his headlong fall into the precipice of an inverted perception of things. This is not a scriptural story, it is a scientific operation taking place every day. The Aitareya Upanishad, if you have read it all, is telling you exactly what the Bible says in connection with the fall of Lucifer and his becoming Satan by a topsy-turvy, headlong falling down and visualizing things contrary to the nature of reality. The Aitareya Upanishad is very brief, but it tells you everything about the process of creation and the return process also. In the original condition of things, Atmai Veda Mantra Asir Nanya Kintana Vedad, there was nothing anywhere except this all inclusive Atman in the origin of things. Brahma Vaita Mantra Asir and all that. The creational doctrine tells us that there is a gradual condensation of the will aspect of this universal consciousness, and there is a tendency to objectification of what is essentially universal. If the universal is to get objectified, it is an example of universal self-alienation. I become a non-I in my perception of things. I behold myself as something other than myself when I look at creation. The process of this self-alienation is described beautifully in this Upanishad. No self-alienation and perception of that type can be possible unless there are faculties or means of perception. These faculties are the sense organs. There was a central will which congealed, as it were, into a direction of consciousness towards what you consider as light and shape. The work of a particular sense organ called the eye is the cognition of light, color and shape. The other organs perform similar functions of a different type. There is a cognition of sound and taste, etc. in the case of other organs. The process of cognition by a sense organ in respect of a self-alienated object outside is impossible to conceive unless there is something to connect the perceiving organ with the object that is perceived. You cannot have a gap between the perceived object and the sense object. To give an illustration, there is a tree in front of me and my eyes are seeing the tree. There is absolutely no connection between my eye and the tree. There is a vacuous emptiness between the eye that is eager to see and the object that is seen. This energy which operates inside as the means of perception is called adhyatma, or the subjective faculty that cognizes things. The objective phenomenon which is cognized by the sense organs is called adhibhuta. All things that you cognize through the sense organs as if they are outside come under the category of what is known as adhibhuta prapancha, the world of materiality and objective. There is a subjective impulse towards cognition of an object which is totally separated from the subjective concept. The subject and the object are dichotomized. I am not the tree and the tree is not me, and yet I see the tree. This phenomenon of the perception of a tree or anything for the matter of that as an object outside by an otherwise pure subjective faculty of a sense organ cannot be explained unless there is an intermediary principle between the subject and the object. In the language of Indian thought, this intermediary principle is called adhidaiva, a superintending principle. Since the senses are concerned only with the object, they have a tremendous push to run towards what is totally different from themselves in the perception of an object. The sense organs cannot locate the presence of this intermediary principle. Just as in a cinematographic projection, you can see the movement on the screen, you can see the reeling of the film in a camera, but you cannot know what is happening between. The light rays, which work in a very interesting manner between the rotating reel of the film and the screen in front, that medium cannot be seen. You sit in the middle of the audience in a cinema hall and try to see the light, you will not see anything. You will see the screen, the moving picture, and if you turn back, you can see a arc light being projected from the camera through which the reel is moving. The little thing cannot be seen. Because the mediating intermediary thing is not an object. Because if that also becomes an object, there will be no intermediary connection at all. Take for granted that the so-called adhidaiva or the intermediary principle also is something to be cognized by the sense organ, then there will be a regressus ad infinitum, as they call it, to cognize through the sense organs that intermediary principle. There must be some relationship between the sense organ and that peculiar intermediary principle. So that will be a second intermediary principle. It will go on like this endlessly. Infinite regress will follow. Because of this difficulty, you cannot know what is happening to you in between yourself and the object that you are perceiving. The adhidaiva, the superintending divinity, cannot be seen by you. The scriptures, the Upanishads, tell us that the sun in the sky is the conditioning factor of the operation in the eye. And similarly, there are divinities which are super physical, beyond the faculties of certain organs and the object also operate for giving life to the sense organs. The eyes cannot see unless there is life in the eye. This life comes from a particular divinity. There are three processes therefore in the act of perception of an object. The subjective side, which is the sense organ, the objective side, which is the object, the middle intermediary principle, which is the divinity. If the divinity is not to operate, you will not know anything that will happen. The whole world will look blank and empty, and no perception will take place. If you withdraw the mind, the eye cannot see the object. Suppose you are deeply thinking something, solving a mathematical problem or some issue which has taken possession of you, you cannot see an object in front. Even a rushing railway train will not be visible to your eye because your mind is elsewhere. The elsewhereness of the mind is nothing but the elsewhereness of the divinity operating through the mind. There is a threefold process in all perception, which is a travesty of affairs ultimately, since you cannot divide reality into a threefold categorized existence, subject, object, and the intermediary principle. The ultimate being is not a subject because there is no object in front of it. It is not an object because there is no one to cognize it. There is no question of the intermediary principle because neither is a subject nor object is there. This is the nature of ultimate being. But inasmuch as we are living in a world of perception through the sense organ, where this threefold category is incumbent upon our life, we are living in a world of unreality. The sense organs are deceiving us. They are not our friends, because they give us a report which is contrary to the nature of things. Indivisibility is dichotomized into the seen subject and the object that is seen. By such a thing is not the true nature of things. To give another example for you, see what is happening to you in the state of dream. There is a something which sees the dream. You are seeing the dream, Mr. Soames. And you are seeing a world of dream. Same world as you see in the waking condition. All sorts of things in space, time, sun, moon, stars, mountains, rivers, people, and entire phenomena of what you see in the waking condition is seen in the dream condition also. You see a mountain, for instance, so far away from you in dream. And you are there also to see that and visualize that mountain. The same process of an intermediary principle comes into operation between the dream subject and the dream object. Without it, the dream subject cannot know that there is a dream mountain. But you know very well, there are no mountains in dream. The waking mind, which is your real mind, so to say, has cut itself into three parts. The visualizer in the dream, the visualized object, and the process also. In dream also there is space, time, causation.
You can see a vast space, and there is time process, and something proceeds from something. And so, as is the case with waking life, so in dream also you will find the entire world operating. But either one in dream, the one indivisible mass of your waking consciousness has converted itself into a threefold operation of a seen subject, a seen object, an intermediary, superintending principle. Same thing happens in the waking condition also. If you believe that there are no mountains in dream, then there is no person who sees the mountain also. And there is no question of the intermediary principle. Why is it so? Because the total mind, which is what we call the waking consciousness, has unnecessarily divided itself into three parts, artificially and not really. The mind has never become the mountain, you have never become a dreaming subject, and there was no superintending principle between them. The same is the case with the waking world. In place of this individual mind that has differentiated itself into three parts in dream, there is a cosmic mind which operates totally but appears as the visualizing subject, you, me, etc., the object seen outside, and it requires an intermediary principle also. This is to say the operation of the sense organs is a complete havoc that has taken place, and perception through the sense organs is not actually a perception of reality. This is why Patanjali Maharaji in one of his sutras says, even the consciousness of an object is a vritti, it has to be subdued. Pramana viparya vikalpa nidra smritaya, five categories of perceptional psyche has been mentioned in the sutra of Patanjali. Pramana means right perception. To be aware that there is a tree in front, it is a right perception, but it is a wrong perception from the point of view of the yoga practice, because the tree is not outside you. Because you have already concluded existence is individual and existence is consciousness. If ultimate being which you are aspiring for, God realization or the realization of the absolute, is indivisible existence consciousness, then the operations of the sense organs, even if it be called right perception in ordinary parlance, is not right perception. It is a vritti of the mind, but because you are accustomed to it and you regard it as something very comfortable and utilitarian, these vrittis or functions of the mind in the process of what we call right knowledge do not cause you suffering. Therefore, they are called painless vrittis, atrishta vrittis. In the perception of an object, to which I made a brief reference last time, there is a twofold categorization. Pure perception in a general fashion and emotionally conditioned perception. I see something in front of me, that is general perception of the object. But I see something in front of me which I like very much or hate very much, that is an emotionally conditioned perception of an object. You may be aware of an object in a general fashion, as you are aware of a mountain in front, or a Ganga that is flowing, or a sun that is shining. You are not emotionally disturbed because you see sun, moon, stars, etc. But there are things in the world which will upset your mind. You cling to them or repel them. These are the painful vrittis, pleasurable vrittis. Born of the ignorance of the fact that your real nature is individual existence. You must know first of all what you are wanting. What do you want, finally? You are running here, there, through your life from morning to evening, what for? To attain perfection. Breathlessness. You don't want to die also. Perfection. For all time to come, which is called immortality, which is the nature of this individual existence. This is what you are unknowingly pursuing, even in your wrong activities of the world. Such being the case, how would you consider sensory perception as anything but the world? Therefore, self-restraint is necessary. Self-restraint is the withdrawal of the operative process of consciousness through a particular organ in terms of an object which is imagined to be there. If dream is not a reality, waking life also is not a reality for a similar reason, because the structural pattern and operational process in dream is similar to the structural pattern and operational process of waking. You are bound either by a golden chain or an iron chain. Anyway, you are bound. You are in the prison. Within what you are bound is not important. You are bound is the fact. So, a yogi, an aspirant in spiritual life, has to practice self-control. Yesterday we touched upon this point, and a person who is wedded to the operation of the senses cannot know reality. Because reality cannot be seen, heard, touched, tasted. It is being as such. Being for being, as they call it. You can imagine for yourself what it would be to be in a state of pure being as such, invisibly, without any externality, no segmentation. Outside you there is nothing, and you are there as a pure being, indivisible, undivided, pervading everything. The one alone is, here comes up. If this is your aspiration, the operational sense organs have to be restrained. In the beginning, the painful vrittis have to be subdued. Later on, the painless vrittis have to be subdued. Most of us have love and hatred. There is nobody who does not love something or hate something. You have created a division between what is necessary and what is not necessary, what is worthwhile and what is not. This categorization is false, because in the interconnectedness of the things of the world, you cannot know which is the cause, which is the effect, and which is beautiful, which is ugly. The things do not exist of them. But sense organs tell you they are there. They are totally there, and therefore you have to love and hate also. It is alright, you can live in this world with this impulsion of yours, but then there is no use of searching for perfection or deathless existence and all that. One has to be sincere in what one is seeking. We should not play a joke with our life. That is why Prajapati told Indra and observe self-control for so many years. When Shri Krishna went for peacemaking to the court of the Kauravas, Dhritarashtra asked Sanjaya, he is minister, somebody is coming, Krishna is coming, who is Krishna? Can I see him? Because he has only heard of Krishna, he didn't know what kind of person he was. Sanjaya gives a reply, Na pratatma, pratatmanam, jatu vidya, janardhanam, atmanastu kriyopayo, nanyatra indriya nidraha. Sri Krishna is pratatma. Who is Kṛtātmā? One who has subdued his sense organs completely. and all objectivity has melted down into the pure universal subjectivity. He is a Kratatma. Such a one is Lord Krishna. And if you are of that type, you can see him. Otherwise, don't try to see him at all. The Puranavatara Shakti, the universal force in the Puranavatara Sri Krishna was due to the melting down of all objectivity into the subjectivity of universality. That is what we call Vishwarupa. And all the world which is pure objectivity melts down into the pure subjectivity of universal being, you are a Vishwarupa at that time, you are God Himself. If that is your aspiration, the senses have to be replaced. Otherwise, you will be running after the wheel of the wrist, a phantasmagoria. You will be like the blind Dhritarashtra wanting to see what he cannot see. But what is self-control? What do you mean by self-restraint? Is it closing the eyes, plucking the ears, not eating, not sleeping, not talking? Do you call this self-restraint? Here again you may have a great misconception about it. To live a true spiritual life, it is very difficult. The moment you touch something, the problem arises. The hobgoblin just is up to prevent you from knowing what is actually taking place. A great competent master is necessary to live a spiritual life. Why spiritual life? You want to live a good life, a humanitarian life, a gentlemanly life, a social welfare life, a worthwhile life, whatever you may call it. This restraint of self is necessary because the more you restrain your sensory operations, the more also you expand the dimension of your being into nearer and nearer border of universal being. Man becomes Superman, or perhaps God-man.